as Maria said, I was basically asked to give an overview of the experimental results and then which facts related to magnetism in graphene or graphite, what we can categorize as established experimental facts and what are the still open questions and things that we need to understand. So I gave a talk about our own work on magnetism in graphene just a couple of weeks ago, so I don't, and most people were there, so I don't think it makes much sense to repeat it, but I will just quickly summarize our own findings and also findings from some other groups. So, as I said, let's look at what are the experimental facts that we can say are established now, so we're sure that in which form magnetism exists in graphene and graphene-based systems. So we know for sure, now we can say with confidence that we know that odd atoms, in particular fluorine odd atoms, in graphene are magnetic, so they carry magnetic moments, and these magnetic moments are non-interacting, so basically graphene with attached fluorine odd atoms behaves as a paramagnet. So I did give a detailed talk on this topic at the conference, but just very quickly, just to show, to remind the people who, I'm sure people who probably were not there. So what we do, we study large collections of graphene crystallites, very small graphene crystallites, that are many of them, that they are all aligned parallel to each other, but they are they do not interact, so electronically they are decoupled. We call the samples graphene paper, so that's what we study. And we can attach fluorine odd atoms to these collections of graphene crystallites by exposing to xenon difluoride for different types. So, and by doing so, we can go from very low, through a whole range of concentrations of fluorine odd atoms, from very low fluorination to full fluorination, when we basically have fluorographing. So, and such treatments with etching fluorine odd atoms, we study the samples using screen magnetometry, so direct detection of magnetic moments, and we see that this fluorination has very profound effect on magnetic behavior of the samples. We see the emergence of very large magnetic moment, which is proportional to the amount of fluorine odd atoms that we attach to these graphene crystallites. So this graph shows the evolution of magnetic moment, total magnetization of the samples as a function of fluorine concentration. So the more fluorine odd atoms we have, the more magnetic moment. So the behavior is very well described by the standard textbook as of brilliant function for non-interacting magnetic moments with, and very importantly, with spin 1/2, so free electron spin. So we don't see any evidence for interaction between these magnetic moments, so they behave as isolated magnetic moments. No evidence of ferromagnetic coupling at all. So that's fluorinated samples, and this is well established. Similar behavior we find also for vacancies. So in this case, we start with the same large patterns of graphene crystallites that we irradiate with high energy ions. We use protons, and then we also use carbon ions. So we create vacancies. Mostly the defects that we create are vacancies. And again, we use screen magnetometry to look at the magnetization of the samples. And we see that, again, clearly paramagnetic behavior emerges. And the magnetic moment is proportional to the amount of vacancies that we create in these defects. So these curves here, they show so that these are concentrations of vacancies, of defects estimated in the samples, and as this concentration increases, magnetic moment increases proportionally. Again, with very high accuracy.
Distance between the
vacancies. Yeah, so the distance is about 10 nanometers, so it's still there, quite far apart, so I can go to get to that a little bit later, but they are very isolated also in space. Of course, we don't know the exact distribution because it's random, but on average, they're about 10 nanometers apart. So again, we see very good fits with spin 1/2, so very similar behavior to fluorine. So basically, point defects, as you can see, point defects in graphene, they carry magnetic moments, but they do not interact, at least for the concentrations that we had. So David, okay, so theoretically, of course, this emergence of magnetic moments is related to formation of localized states near the Dirac point, the vanishing density of states. And there have been experimental work where such localized states, localized electronic states, have been observed using STM, scanning tunneling spectroscopy, at low temperatures. So these are some pictures. So this work was done on graphite, not on graphene, on graphite. So very clean samples of graphite in ultra clean conditions and in high vacuum. At low temperatures, were irradiated with argon ions and then annealed. So prepared basically in a very careful manner. Scanning tunneling spectroscopy showed this very sharp resonances, sharp electronic states near the Dirac point. right. Okay, so another experimental work providing evidence to the same behavior we have seen, we have heard rather, very recently, just at the conference a couple of weeks ago. I don't have any pictures to show because this work is unpublished as far as I understand. Basically, they used, Kawakami gave a talk. This is, it was done at Riverside. So they looked at spin transfers, so they did spin transfer measurements at low temperatures. Again, they looked at both, attached hydrogen ad atom by hydrogen radiation in situ, and also I forgot how they created vacancies. Anyway, so they created both vacancies and hydrogen ad atoms, and then from spin transport measurements, they concluded that they see very clear and convincing evidence of paramagnetic moments against spin 1/2 associated with both with hydrogen ad atoms and vacancies. So all very well, magnetic ad atoms, vacancies, both magnetic. Still, there are quite a number of questions that remain and then need to be answered. So I will go back to our own measurements. So with this fluorinated graphene and irradiated graphene, especially for fluorinated graphene. Although I said that the total magnetic moment in the sample was proportional to the number of fluorine ad atoms, but actually if we analyze and normalize the magnetic moment to the number of ad atoms that we can measure, we see that the magnetic moment per atom is only 10 to the minus 3. So basically only one ad atom out of 1,000 appears to be magnetic. So to explain this picture, so we can understand and explain this picture, if we recall that actually we expect fluorine ad atoms on graphene to cluster, because they have very low migration barriers, ad atoms, in general fluorine ad atoms in particular, and also graphene. We know that that chemical activity of graphene is significantly enhanced at the tops of the ripples of the bumps because of ripples on freestanding graphene. So we expect, from all we know, we expect these atoms to cluster. So atoms are mobile. And then we can understand our results if we assume that magnetic moment, so that within the cluster, basically magnetic moments in the interior of the cluster, they cancel each other, they're not there at all. And the only contribution we get from the cluster is from some atoms at the edges. But of course, the detailed pictures is not really understood. So that's something, that's the question we need to answer. What is the effect of clustering? So are there any localized states associated with ad atoms in the interior of the cluster at all, or they are not there, so do we only have localized states associated with edges? If the cluster acts as an entity or just individual atoms of data, so these questions need to be answered. Another question related to fluorination. We have fluorine ad atoms. We see magnetism spin 1/2 also from Roland Kawakami's work. So they see hydrogen ad atoms, similar behavior, but still there is a question, is this magnetic behavior of atoms, is it completely universal? It doesn't matter which element it is, or does it depend on the element? I did try to look in literature for results, theoretical results for clearing atoms, magnetism, and actually I found that a couple of papers that said it shouldn't be magnetic, some other people say it should be magnetic, so basically it's again another open question. So for vacancies, again, so vacancies of course are not mobile, they cannot cluster. Yeah.
So you know the number of fluorines by weight, or how do you know?
We know from XPS, from X-ray fluorescence spectroscopy, so we can measure the percentage of bonds, carbon fluorine bonds present, and then also the amount of fluorine atoms present. If you can measure that.
Can you extract information on the distribution spatially with that XPS?
No. Okay. So this clusters I'm talking about, their spatial scale is 10 nanometers. And XPS is the spot size from which we collect information is about 200 micron. So it's much smaller.
So they form clusters of radius 10 nanometers?
That's the picture which allows us to understand our results. Yes. Yeah. So the number of atoms. Okay. So the number of atoms. If I say that one cluster gives us one magnetic moment, then the number of atoms in the cluster from this data is 2,000, from 2,000 to 1,000. 2,000 atoms cluster is 8 nanometers, 7, 8 nanometers in size. And this is the same size as the size of the ripple. So this typical size of the ripples is also 7, 8 nanometers.
But it's very difficult to come in with some scan probe and confirm that it forms clusters, or?
It's difficult, yes. It is not impossible, but there is no such experiment. There is some experimental evidence on carbon nanotubes. People did that on carbon nanotubes, on the curved parts of carbon nanotubes, fluorinated carbon nanotubes. And in STM, there was evidence of clustering. So if you have this curved area, then there will be a cluster of fluorine atoms.
We know that graphene is rippled on this scale by TM measurements, and we know theoretically that fluorine atoms prefer to sit on bumps, yeah, on curved surfaces.
Is it because it's simply kind of like a paper?
Yeah, it's not flat. It's all, well, this is an artist's impression, but this artist's impression is based on experimental data.
In reality, it's more crumpled, like crumpled paper.
No, it's laminate.
Yeah. No. You mean more crumpled than this?
Yeah.
No. This is based on this, although it is of course a simulation, but it is based on experimental data. And experimental data that the size of the ripple's lateral size is about 7-8 nanometers, and vertical size is 1 angstrom, that's 2 angstrom. So that's basically this picture is based on TM observation. No, graphene.
It's a paper,
no, we call it that way. Okay, let me call it laminate.
Yes, not destroyed.
Yeah, it's in the sense that you can take it, you know, you can pick it up. It's freestanding, so it's not on substrate or anything.
It's any paper. It's a good paper.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So can I move on to vacancies? So in the case of vacancies, so they cannot cluster, so they form in some random distribution of them, but more or less they're uniform. Again, it's quite. So in fluorine, of course, case the many fluorine atoms are right next to each other, so they sit or they attach to both A and B atoms of A and B sublattice, neighboring atoms of A and B sublattice, and this is what we think causes this cancellation of the magnetic moment in the interior of the cluster. So with vacancies, they're separated by this quite large distance on average. But when we normalize, so the total moment to the number of vacancies that we know in our samples, we get sort of the number of Bohr magnetons per vacancy about 0.1. So experimentally, it is almost as good as 1, We can say why, because, okay, so this defect concentration is estimated from computer simulations. Computer simulations work for particular model. That model does not describe very, very well our graphene crystallites because of varying separations between them and so on and so forth. So there is quite a possible error there. But also probably much more important is that there should be a reconstruction of vacancies. And what that effect of reconstruction, for example, by vacancies, not expected to be eliminated. Other types of defects, so that's another question. So what is the effect of reconstruction? What is the effect of defect density? So if vacancies are close to each other, do they cancel each other's magnetism, or do they couple, or we don't
can
see
I ask
any
more basic question? Yeah, sorry, yeah. I mean, earlier you had said that you know that they're split in half,
yeah.
And I'd assumed that it's because of the magnetic moment, but since you see you have very small magnetic moment per defect, is it because you fit to the Brillouin function and you find it?
No.
How do you determine that it's spin 1/2?
We fit to the Brillouin function. Yes, yeah. Spin 1/2 we determine from fits to the Brillouin function. So.
And the Brillouin functions really, they look so different from.
Like
that's what, this is what I should be looking
at. So this graph demonstrates how sure we are that it is spin 1/2. So these are experimental, well, these are for vacancies, and then there are similar graphs also for fluorine adapters. So this is the red lines are fits to spin 1/2, and then 1, et cetera, et cetera. So you can see that even spin 1 gives a much steeper increase in magnetization.
Yeah, you should mention that we assume the G factor is 2.
Yes. That's what
yeah.
I was going to
yeah.
say.
Yeah, 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 we do. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so it's what we, it's 1, J1, it's spin half multiplied by J. So J, no one argues that J is very different from 2, but only multiple of these two parameters going to fit.
Yeah. But there were some measurements, EPR measurements, that they obviously can extract G factor, and there is a slight difference, but it's two, basically it's 2. Yeah. Okay. Right. So, yeah, so these are the questions. Okay, so now let me move on to another sort of big question, of course, in magnetism, carbon and graphite and so on, ferromagnetism. So, of course, there have been 10 years or so, there have been lots and lots of papers claiming ferromagnetism in pristine graphite, it's just pristine carbon, and there is magnetic signals there, etc. So now we can confidently say that ferromagnetism in pristine graphite is an artifact. So it's not intrinsic to carbon. Pristine graphite only. So these are the results of our own measurements. They have just come out last week in EPL. So we looked at a large number of commercially available crystals of highly oriented pyrolytic graphite. That's basically what we're talking about when we're talking about graphite. So highly oriented pyrolytic graphite, it consists also of crystallites. So the size and misorientation of these crystallites depends on how the crystals are prepared, so on the temperature and length, etc. We don't know the details. What we know is that the companies that sell this HUPG, let me call it HUPG, highly oriented pyrolytic graphite, so they specify the misorientation between the crystallites and also the size of the crystallites. We can see from scanning at the microscopy, it's possible just to see them and measure the size of the crystallites. So we looked at the number of HUPG crystals from different manufacturers and different grades with different misorientations between crystallites, etc. And in almost all of them, we find ferromagnetic loops, as you see in many papers. So you can see there is a random magnetization, there is a coercive force. So very, very signals are very, very small. So here, this is per gram, normalized per gram of the sample. So the saturation of magnetization is 1 to 3, 10 to the minus 3 in per gram. If we compare with iron or magnetite, there you have 100 to 200 in your program. So it's orders of magnitude less than in any ferromagnetic material. But nevertheless, it looks like ferromagnetism. So, and in these samples, we did a careful study. So we looked at the, we found no correlation with the size of the crystallites making up this HPG, with misorientation of the crystallites, which should happen, which is related, obviously, to the grain boundaries and the structure of the grain boundaries between them. No correlation with those at all. But we found that all the crystals that showed ferromagnetic response, they all contain very tiny, well, micron-sized inclusions of ferromagnetic material. And the amount of these particles, so this is sort of 200 microns, so it's large scale, so you can see little white dots. They're ferromagnetic particles. You only see them if you use particular mode in a scanning electron microscopy, so backscattering, where we can see heavy elements, light elements. So then we can see them. Usually people use another mode, topographic mode, just secondary electrons, and then you don't see this difference, so you won't see these particles at all. So probably that's why they were overlooked for such a long time. So this is a larger scale, so this particle is actually quite big on, in microscopic terms. So 2-3 micron typical size, and we did chemical analysis, local chemical analysis of this particle, and we find that they consist mostly of iron, sometimes titanium, a bit of oxygen, so basically magnetite, titanium magnetite, and if we can calculate, of course, it is known that micron, 2 micron size particles of magnetite, they are ferromagnetic, and we've done our own measurements as well. So basically, the total magnetization just from this couple of thousand of particles in a sample give you exactly this ferromagnetic signal that we observed. So
can you remove the inclusions and try again?
Sorry?
Can you clean it?
Okay, so we did not try to clean them in principle, but I found the paper, it's only online, available online, where people say that they can kill the ferromagnetism, again in pristine HPG, by high vacuum, high temperature annealing. So what the people claimed, so that in this paper, so these are the curves, so they see, again, the same this ferromagnetic loop in pristine graphite. Then they anneal it at very high temperature, 2,300 degrees. So for hours, apparently, they anneal. So after first anneal, it whatever it is, I can't remember, so how many hours. So this ferromagnetic signal is reduced a lot. They anneal even more, it just disappears. So the authors of this paper, they explain it by disappearance of defects at grain boundaries because the grains grow, but actually they did. According to their own results, the grains grow by 30%, and ferromagnetism disappears completely. So it absolutely doesn't make sense in that respect. But on the other hand, high vacuum annealing at this high temperature is most likely to remove, iron and things like that. So that's another evidence that you can clean it up. Yeah, but also what is important in our own study, some samples did not have any inclusions. We could not find any particles, and they did not show any ferromagnetism. So there's very, very clear correlation between the presence of this contamination and ferromagnetism.
So the bottom line that 90% at least of the previous studies on so-called ferromagnetism in graphite was complete and utter rubbish.
Since nobody's here representing the
it's not like that. It's it's not like that, Maria, because it's used a very rare combination of techniques, which I can't imagine that you can see those clusters by anything else, rather than this combination of technique, which was a lucky chance that we used it. There is still a question remains what hydrogenated heavily damaged hydrogenated graphene does, but some papers which show magnetic signals exactly on this sort of graphite we use, it's clear that those were artifacts.
About what I was about to say was that 95% of those papers, 90, they the ferromagnetism is not, I mean, they don't really defend this pristine ferromagnetism. They defend that if you damage the sample,
you say they changed their story in the last few years.
They always say that they bombed the sample 10 years ago, 5 years ago.
It's all pristine graphite, it's all grain boundaries. Even Misha Katznal thought he was one in all those papers. All rubbish.
Okay. I think that bombing was very important.
But yeah, that's what I wanted to say. So, however, they do claim this large increase of ferromagnetism with very similar parameters, but the absolute value increases after irradiation. So there are lots of, I listed some papers, there are lots of papers, etc. So what happens there, I cannot explain that, but sort of strongest argument that people have used and said, oh yes, now we know, so it is ferromagnetic and it is carbon, not anything else, that came from XMCD, so X-ray circular magnetic dichroism experiments. So, and then the latest study, so first they had a study on carbon films, just amorphous carbon films. But the latest study, this one quoted here, is on HLPG again. So it's on graphite, on HLPG. And actually, there is a long, very long discussion, but the result is not clear at all. So basically, this shows this typical signal, so the carbon edge, so this is pristine, the virgin, so red curve, irradiated black curve. And then there is, so this is the actual difference in the X-ray absorption for different polarizations of circular polarized X-rays. So this is the difference. So for pristine, it is very, very small. So the claim is that it is still above noise, but it is very, very small. For irradiated, it is larger. But the problems with this experiment, so firstly, they observe this larger sort of difference for X-ray absorption, for circular polarized X-ray, etc., not at the energy where the these localized states are expected for this magnetic localized states are expected, but significantly below. But also the biggest problem I found is they say that they did a careful study, so they looked at X-ray absorption at the surface of the sample and also deeper into the sample, and they are saying that they see this magnetic signal only from the top couple of nanometers. So they go from 50 nanometers inside, they already don't see any magnetic signal. Well, actually, it is possible to estimate how the vacancies are distributed as a result of this radiation, and they are definitely not in the top layer. So there are some microns inside the sample, depending on the energy, etc. So this is actually a big contradiction. Obviously, I cannot explain it; it's not our experiment, but it is not very straightforward to understand that.
But we can't say anything about the irradiated samples. They may have some ferromagnetism.
That's what I'm saying.
They might just vacancies being if close enough to each other create ferromagnetism. It would be strange that it happens at room temperature, but this kind of ferromagnetism can't be ruled out by any of our experiments or results.
No, I'm not saying that our experiments are ruling anything out, but I'm just saying that there are quite the opposite. So this finding of the contamination of the ferromagnetic fusion does not explain at all what happens, why the ferromagnetism increases so much when they are irradiated. But I'm saying that, okay, so there is evidence from speed measurements again, and there is some evidence for this measurements, but it's not very straightforward. And also, I'm not a specialist, but apparently there is, it's possible to have such dichroism as a result of non-magnetic effects. So it's just not very straightforward, that's all I'm saying. But we cannot explain without. Okay, right, so now ferromagnetic coupling. So, of course, the important, what is surprising and why everybody's cautious to different extents, is that the ferromagnetism is apparently observed at room temperature. Of course, we can expect ferromagnetic coupling at some temperature, some low temperature, and there it should be, and it will not be so surprising. And this paper, I showed here, is here there is some evidence of possibly ferromagnetic coupling, or at least quite large magnetic moments present in pristine graphene, not irradiated, not treated at all. So this is from magnetotransport measurements, and when basically they looked with a group from Grenoble, and then they measured at very low temperatures. They measured magnetoconductance of graphene strips. So here, the main results shown here on this constriction, but they are saying that it doesn't depend on the size of the constriction. It can be just a strip of graphene, and they still see very similar effects. So they see strong weak localization effects, etc., etc. But the bottom line is that they see hysteresis at sufficiently fast rates of changing magnetic field. They see hysteresis in the magnetoconductance, and the only way to understand it is by assuming the presence of magnetic moments which are not spin 1/2, so which are larger than spin 1/2. So somehow magnetically coupled. They also tried to estimate the concentration, the amount of these moments, and it's sort of it's very low again. So low concentration of magnetic moments, but the signatures are very clear, and they don't depend on procedures with which they prepared the samples. They annealed the samples, prepared with different solvents, different dissolvents. So lots of experimental parameters were changed, but the effect was basically there. Okay, so some evidence of coupling. So for theoreticians, the question is, what is the... But these measurements, of course, are at very low temperature. So basically, in their measurements, hysteresis disappeared above 1 Kelvin. It was only at very low temperature. So there, ferromagnetic coupling will not be surprising, but this question for theoreticians, what the TC is. Okay, and then finally, I don't know, it is just probably the least important question in the list of questions that I made, but it is related somehow to the measurement, this magnetic conductance. Of course, before we started irradiating and coordinating graphene, we saw paramagnetism also in just pristine graphene crystallites. So it's very weak, but it is still there, and magnetic moment, and the spin there is not 1/2, so it's a different nature. And perhaps it is related to this magnetic conductance measurements as well. Ah, okay, and also just was because I was preparing an overview of experimental results, so there is another sort of experiment which found the Curie behavior by EPR, electron spin resonance, so they mechanically exfoliated lots and lots and lots of graphene flakes and put them on magnetically silent tape and put them all in the spectrometer and also see evidence of Curie paramagnetism.
And those flakes need not be single-layer?
Well, they say that they checked, so they checked randomly and they were mostly single-layer. Also half the simple ones. Yeah. So that's I put the questions here just the same on the slide.
Did you try the experiment with fluorine on binary graphene?
So when we fluorinate our samples, we start with the collection of crystallites which has significant proportion of bilayers, but fluorine, it intercalates. So basically we have graphene fluorinated from both sides, so fluorine atoms attached, because when you have full fluorination, so that fluorine atoms are attached both to A sites and B sites, then you know the one on A side will be at the top and on B side at the bottom, and then you have like corrugation of the building, etc. So only then you get stable variation.
Did I understand correctly that vacancies you get like two orders of magnitude higher magnetic moments than for fluorine?
Yes,
so
per defect, yeah.
Could you elaborate on what evidence there is for magnetic moments in pristine graphene? I don't know how you refer to it at the end there. I don't know the literature as well as I should.
Okay, so basically there are three experiments I can quote. So one is this one, it's our own, so it's this paper. So
pristine, it's all defective.
Well, it's pristine in the sense that it was not fluorinated or irradiated.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
But in our experiment, it was prepared by liquid exfoliation, so ultrasonic cleavage in a solvent.
Okay.
Of HUPG.
Well, there wasn't enough defects at the edges of everywhere else, so it's...
Okay.
In this experiment, it was... In this experiment, it was mechanically exfoliated, and in this experiment, it was just, you know, prepared graphene strips or constrictions or just strips. As people usually do with lithography on substrate and so
on. Enough edges.
Yeah.
And can you distinguish edge paramagnetism from vacancies or coordinated adapters? Can you know if most of the signal comes from the edges or from inside the defects?
But all I can say is that when we don't have defects, that when we only have edges, the spin is not one factor.
Okay, thank you very much.
So now, Fagó is going to tell us some
issues. There's a couple of things about unusual features of the Gondel effect in graphene. And how do I
No, it's on the right.
Oh, the light. It's the light. Oh, it's behind the box. The screen is mechanical.
No, we can't see anything from it.
Sorry?
First of all, turn on the light. Hidden light switch.
Okay, so you asked a couple of things about the Kondo effect and magnetic moments.
That's right. I don't remember the words now. I can.
So you all know what the Kondo effect is about. That it was kind of realized that when you have a Kondo, a magnetic impurity in a metal, and you try to find out what's the effect of the of the high energy electronic levels on the effective coupling, if it is antiferromagnetic, it grows. And eventually it has a logarithmic divergence that was identified by Kondo. And that allowed you to define some scales. In terms of, this is the density J, is the coupling, and rho is the local density of electronic states. So you have a dimensionless coupling constant, which tells you that something happens at some temperature, and Anderson figured out that what you have would be singlet. And in a way, this was the start of the modern version of the renormalization group, along with the 5-4 theory, thanks to Wilson. And this is all there is in a normal metal. So in terms of the renormalization group, what one says is that J is a marginally relevant coupling. And it was understood well before graphene that if you had Dirac fermions, as the density of states as function of energy goes to zero, J was going to go from marginal to irrelevant. And then as function of the chemical potential, you could expect a quantum critical point, because at some point
you will, if you fill the energy, it will be sufficiently large, so you will have room for this logarithm to develop, and you will go back to the ordinary Kondo effect. And there is a lot of literature on the Kondo effect on Dirac systems before graphene, because it gives rise to this non-trivial quantum critical point and so on. The graphene is very special in or a Kondo system. It's not only that, that this is the perturbative version of the Kondo problem.
The way you said it sounded a little bit off. I mean, so if I sit right at the Dirac point in chemical potential, then there should be a critical point as a function of the strength of the Kondo coupling.
Okay.
But at any chemical potential away from zero, then the Kondo temperature will be non-zero and will be screening.
So you will have here Kondo. I'm not no Kondo, something like that. What I mean is that there will be that this is at zero temperature. So this will be the phase diagram. Here you will not have any Kondo. For mu equals zero, you will have there will be a critical J.
Why is there a critical J when mu is non-zero? You have a non-zero density of states then.
Oh, okay. It depends on the value of W, if you like. Okay. Technically, I believe you will have a tiny logarithmic divergence as well. Okay.
It's just that the Kondo temperature
is. The only thing is that if your temperature is comparable to mu, you will also not be detected.
Sure, but that's a crossover transition.
So you have it. You have it. The critical point is strictly speaking. So, but the thing is that if you go to graphene, you put in here, assuming the usual Kondo induced by a magnetic impurity, typically this is charged. So in graphene or in a metal or anywhere, there is some charge transfer. There's a Coulomb interaction near where the magnetic impurity is, and that shifts the chemical potential locally. That is screen very effectively in a normal metal. But in graphene, if you're right at the Dirac point, you don't screen anything. And actually, if this shift, this scalar potential induced by the impurity, is comparable to the bandwidth of graphene, you have the same situation as when you have a vacancy, which is what Irina described. You have a sharp resonance here. So if you take into account the possibility that there is a strong scalar potential, you change completely the Kondo physics of the system. And a way to finding out what happens is by calculating, I mean, in a way, the Kondo physics is sort of like that orthogonality catastrophe. The spin, there is this antiferromagnetic coupling, and the system tries to have antiferromagnetic fluctuations, and that is prevented by kind of Anderson orthogonality catastrophe. Every time you switch the spin, all the conduction electrons have to rearrange themselves. So in a way, you can get an idea of what happens without solving directly the Kondo problem, but by looking at the orthogonality catastrophe, which appears on the conduction electron, when the spin of impurity goes from spin up to spin down. So you can switch by hand the spin, flip the spin of the impurity, and you can calculate what is the phase shift associated with this potential, delta J, so to speak. In a way, the potential is that you go from plus J to minus J. Now you can do it if there is no scalar potential, and obviously you will recover this picture. And you can do it with some approximations, assuming that you start with a vacancy, and around the vacancy there is a kind of local potential which changes sign. So you have a vacancy to start with. That's a question of just having the right boundary conditions to your Dirac equation. And then you generate this kind of density of states by assuming that this is like a zigzag boundary condition. And that provides for you, before you start studying a magnetic effects, it provides you with with the initial non-interacting picture of graphene with a resonance right at the Dirac point. And then you can calculate how does the phase shifts change when you perturb a little bit this vacancy problem as function of the energy of the incoming electrons. And that's can do it analytically. And the picture changes a lot. You have a phase shift which basically goes some cathode. So basically the impurities acts like a resonance scatter, that means a phase shift equal to pi over 2, except that at the lowest energy the phase shift goes to 0. But if you neglect this log effect, actually if you take into account a strong scalar potential, the Kondo effect you expect is not very different from the Kondo effect, Kondo effect you have in a normal metal. You have a significant phase shift, which only when you're really, really close to zero energy, you will see that the phase shift goes to zero, and eventually some tiny Kondo effect, but much tinier than what you get from neglecting the existence of the vacancy or the strong scalar potential will arise. This is one of the things I wanted to mention.
So what's the formula for Kondo temperature?
We didn't estimate that. This when this log goes to zero, so it is really small. I mean, in order to make, you really have to go to very small energy. So if you want to have this of order 10, you really need to
Normal Kondo temperature sort of exponential, like exponential small. So here's a little bit like exponential and exponential, or
something like that. Yeah. That's hard. I mean, all I can say is that the phase shift looks like that. So it looks like a constant, which is what you get in an ordinary Kondo system.
So why? Okay, this Michael Fuhrer's group, they claim the observation of the Kondo effect. So why do you think it's a wrong?
Ferromagnetic and a high. There is an alternative explanation. They irradiate their samples like green mass, and they claim that in transport they see scaling compatible with Kondo physics at for Kondo temperatures in the order of 50K or something like that. There is an alternative explanation which was suggested. We were discussing that Antonio Castagneto and Michael Fuhrer doesn't disagree. I mean, they're building vacancies in the graphene lattice. Now, besides the magnetic moment, I mean, you also have here sigma bonds, which probably will pair. So there will be a small reconstruction, you didn't mention that. And this small reconstruction may imply that maybe these atoms can come slightly closer and this is left alone, or vice versa. So here you have actually like a three-state model. I mean, this configuration can have quantum fluctuations. Carbon is a very light atom. So it's not impossible that there is some reconstruction which is not static. So then you have like a structural two-level system, which is a common feature in glasses, high, but degenerate, but by definition it has to be degenerate. Then you can show that a three-level quantum system with this geometry will split into a doublet and a singlet. And then you have a doublet interacting with conduction electrons, scattering conduction electrons. And that's almost the same. It's not exactly the same as the Kondo problem, but it's very close. So dissipating two-level system and so on. That is a possible explanation which cannot be ruled out by the experiments.
But wouldn't it require a lot of fine-tuning of parameters?
No, but that's the point. To have the degeneracy, you mean?
No, to have the temperature scale be right.
That's what we were trying to figure out. What is the temperature scale? But it's hard. We have to put numbers in the tunneling of carbon atoms from configuration to configuration.
I think would be pretty small, right?
Carbon is not, it depends how close they are. According to LDA calculations, the barrier between different configurations is millivolts. So you don't have a high barrier and you have a very light atom. So.
What about inhomogeneities? Will mirror density states always be fine at that point? So we'll have some.
This will give you, for this you don't need it. This will give you kind of features even in the metallic phase.
No, I'm saying the puzzle is that there's a Kondo effect at zero doping?
No. They see a Kondo effect with a Kondo temperature they
fit
at many gate voltages, including a zero gate voltage, but not only at zero.
When you say Kondo effect, they see temperature dependence of resistance,
which seems to have a log in it.
Has a bump somewhere.
Yeah, has a bump at 50 Kelvin.
Yes, right.
They feed it with a well-known Kondo expression, which contains logs and everything, and they claim the fit is excellent, and from that they extract the Kondo temperature. Okay, now but let me finish with the second thing I wanted to speak about. This is for Kondo system, but the vacancy needs not be a Kondo system. The vacancy is what you have is true. So you take out this atom and you create this resonance at the Dirac point, it seems so, which spread very far away from the vacancy itself. At the vacancy, there is no spin or there is nothing. It's empty. So actually, and obviously, as soon as you have this configuration and your chemical potential is at the Kondo point, you will generate, as soon as there is some finite interaction, you will get a magnetic moment sitting in this resonance. Now, this resonance is not your ordinary Kondo system where you have a cobalt atom where conduction electrons hop in and out. There's a large repulsion on top of the cobalt atom, so this process is very short. And that kind of hopping divided by the Coulomb repulsion whatever magnetic atom you have gives you J. So J in ordinary Kondo systems arises from hoppings in and out of the conduction electrons into another orbit. But this is not the situation here. The resonance is made up of the same orbitals as the rest of the conduction. And then, if you think which kind of interaction is most likely to exist between an electron presumably sitting in this resonance and the electrons elsewhere, okay, what you're doing is you're putting your resonance that exists here, in one of the solarizers. And it decays, it falls off like a power law very slowly, actually, away from the vacancy. That the picture and actual experiments are not very far from the theoretical picture. But here what you have is pi electrons, part of them are still in the conduction band, and there are other pi electrons which are at the resonance. If you turn on a local interaction, which is the most obvious thing to do, what you will get is a ferromagnetic interaction. There's no hopping here. I mean, the resonance is already orthogonal to the conduction electron by construction. If you start from a non-interacting system, by construction you have a resonance and you have perturbed the conduction band in such a way that you have a new set of orthogonal states.
So ferromagnetic interaction between what and what?
The conduction electron and the electron responsible for the magnetic moment, the electron sitting at the resonance.
So they're local or?
Yeah, so I mean, which
so
kind?
What do you call ferromagnetic interaction?
That was too far. So let's, which kind of interactions may arise? All the action is in graphene itself. It's not due to the repulsion inside an external atom of graphene. So which interaction to look at? I mean, you can have many interactions, including the non-screen Coulomb interaction. if you do a simpler thing, you just turn on local interactions on each side, which definitely are there, the Hubbard term, then what you get is a ferromagnetic interaction.
So you say, what you're saying probably is that locally it's polarized becomes. The clouds of electrons around the vacancy could become polarized.
Yeah, but ferromagnetic, not anti-ferromagnetic.
Yeah, yeah,
like in,
okay.
But the flow...
So how many? How large is the cloud?
Very large. Theoretically, if you insist in having clean graphene, pure Dirac, it is not normalizable. It decays the density. This is kind of not fully localized because the density goes like 1/r².
Does it mean that you should have an isotropy? So if you have in the sense of
dependence
on field direction, or?
Not necessarily. That will require probably spin-orbit decoupling, which is weak. No, what it means is that you will never have a Kondo effect. Because, as I said, I mean, the anti-ferromagnetic Kondo interaction is marginally relevant, if it is ferromagnetic, it's marginally irrelevant, and it disappears. You don't, there's no way to form a singlet or anything. So the magnetic moment will never be quenched, will survive at the lowest temperature. Now, this is just a guess. So we did something more numerical, along with Hector, who is here, Thomas Pruske from Göttingen and other people. We looked to the dynamical mean field equations for this system, which is a technique in principle only good at large dimensions. So it's not necessarily great for graphene, but...
So, Parker, before you go into further theory, how stable is the vacancy, okay? Is it a stable defect, or is it going to be, whatever, some molecule sits on this, atom sits and quenches all magnetic moment, and et cetera? Is it reconciled? Those two free states, do they couple each other by distortion? Anyone calculate it? I know that the peak is not at zero, like theoretically, but shifted a little bit, but it was clean system and graphite, so is it stable? Anything known about it?
In graphite, it seems stable. There are many calculations. They all support the idea that there is a mid-gap state, and there's not a big change, but different calculation. I'm not expert in this.
I think Chiana and Falco, they calculated that there is a considerable shift even for a vacancy from zero position.
I don't know. You mean of this resonance?
Yeah, of this.
No, but by definition.
0.1
EV. 0.1 EV may be due to T prime and other terms which break electron holes in it. That's not inconceivable, but on the other hand, the experiments for graphite don't support that picture. There, the resonance is very much in the middle. Okay, so the thing we were looking at is whether really this ferromagnetic coupling is there or not. And then we use this technique, dynamical mean field, which is very powerful for correlated systems, but it's not necessarily too good for two-dimensional systems. But actually what we use from that technique is the fact that it's a way of including quantum fluctuations in an impurity. That's the crucial aspect of dynamical mean field, that you make it self-consistent. So what we wanted is to look at quantum fluctuations, quantum magnetic fluctuations associated to this vacancy in graphene. And it was the crucial aspect of the calculation was the use of the solver this method has attached to it. So we looked at the kind of local impurity, I mean, containing two atoms, not just one, and embedded it into a correlated system, which more or less was expected to mimic graphene. We also did the second order perturbation, described the environmental by second order perturbation theory. And the results didn't change much. And the crucial thing is that, indeed, if you look to the susceptibility of this system, it's Curie-like. So these numerical calculations support the idea that there is a magnetic moment at the impurity and that it's not quenched at the lowest temperatures we could reach. which were not great, but it was the best we could do. So so far, we do think that the coupling between the possible local moment induced by a vacancy over a hydrogen atom and the conduction band is ferromagnetic, and because of that, there's no reason for the Kondo effect to appear.
So, the basic question for you, there exists a huge amount of literature claiming room temperature ferromagnetism in carbon system. All right, 90% of them is rubbish, but there are still 100 papers which probably have rats. So it's mostly irradiated and etc. Can you imagine a mechanism of strongly dissolved carbon which would give you which give you Curie temperature like of an iron, or is it even this 10% is rubbish? So because boundaries and dissolved.
No, I mean even the best I can see for a clean system, you have this this magnetic moment is very expensive.
Nothing to do with the reality. Those systems are strongly disordered and irradiated.
Okay, if it's disorder, it's much harder to develop any decent theory.
You can answer a theoretical question, let's say, or maybe think about it at least. What would be the ground state if you had a model of, a network of interlocking zigzag edges? Can you get a high TC from that?
That's a good question. There is a problem that at the edges, definitely this will be a band shifted from zero because of T prime, which probably is 0.1 electron volts and things like that, terms like that, and maybe whatever atoms are sitting at the edges. So then you no longer have a sharp peak at the Dirac point. You have a broad resonance. And then there's a competition where the value of the interaction and the local density of states. Presumably you will get ferromagnetism. I tend to think that for some feeling, probably not directly at the neutrality point, but to just literally shift a little bit. You will get ferromagnetism at the edges. That doesn't seem to be confirmed by any experiments.
A three-dimensional amorphous network with plenty of vacancies, would it be of anything three-dimensional carbon with random stacking?
It's not complicated because, I mean, mean field calculation, people have done a lot of work on that. They suggest that these local moments, the way they interact between themselves, is ferro and anti-ferromagnetic depending on which sublattice they're sitting. So then you will have more ice cream glass with competing interactions.
But it's interesting that in graphene, and maybe even surprising, that in this graphene with lots of head atoms, whatever, lots of spins somehow, it seems like they don't interact at all, right?
I like that.
Yeah. So
if you, the fact is that this picture of a very delocalized vacancy state suggests that there should be some strong interaction between spins. And that would suggest a high, some QE temperature, maybe not room temperature, maybe 10 Kelvin, something like that. And that doesn't seem to be the case. I agree with that. That's super.
Can you comment,
Maria,
there was the paper with
Eckert-Goulart
interaction,
the
TC was very low, so was
it
was
1 Kelvin. That was the first trial we made, yeah. And we got a very low TC, QE temperature. We were using my question is which kind of interactions you use. We were using local Haber interactions. If you put the long-range Coulomb interaction, TC goes up. That's enough. And it's not fully consistent to use local interactions in graphene. But that's the best we could do. Yeah, there we obtain something in the order of 1 Kelvin. I don't know how realistically any change. It's just an order of magnitude estimate.
Okay.
So your current view will be that it should be more?
No, maybe, but it's a lower bound in the sense that if you put long range interactions, it will go up.
Are there DFT calculations, spin polarized DFT calculations for, let's say, a single fluorine on top of the carbon? Must be for hydrogen.
Something
that
will be.
I think it's DFT. And then they said there should be no.
It's been zero.
Okay. Yeah, because it's buffinite nature. It's AB cancel each other, so you need to put them on a single sublattice.
There was one last week in the John Matt, who's a UAL at all, and they claimed that they were on the fountain show to and they had in a lot of different islands.
They all got the same.
They all got the same. Okay.
No, so for the single atom, they should
Should be spin and half, right?
Yeah, but when you have, the question is what you have, but when you have an atom attached to each carbon atom, you're an atom attached to each carbon atom on both sublattices. So basically, each carbon, carbon has a fluorine atom. So from experiment, we have to conclude that.
That you always have an even number of fluorines in the cluster.
Yeah. Except for one, which is awesome.
Occasionally they're odd, and that's where your moments come from.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, we can, Paco?
Nothing to add.
Maybe anybody wants to spontaneously add anything to this discussion?
To reiterate my disappointment that we don't have yet a ferromagnetism in graphene.
These low temperature measurements at 30 millikelvins, they will chance, but okay. I heard a confirmation that at 30 millikelvins there is some history. But okay, whether you're happy with this temperature or not, it's enough.
Preferably. But, beggars can't be choosers.
More comments or questions or anything? No? Okay, so that's it.